I asked my boss, Russell McGee Buffalino, to let me call Jimmy at his cottage by the lake. I was on a peace mission. All I was trying to do at that particular time was keep this thing from happening to Jimmy. I reached out for Jimmy on Sunday afternoon, July 27, 1975. Jimmy was gone by Wednesday, July 30th. Sadly, as we say, gone to Australia, down under. I will miss my friend until the day I join him. I was at my own apartment in Philly using my own phone when I made the long-distance call to Jimmy's cottage at Lake Orion near Detroit. If I had been in on the thing on Sunday, I would have used a payphone, not my own phone. You don't survive as long as I did by making calls about important matters from your own phone. I wasn't made with a finger. My father used the real thing to get my mother pregnant. While I was in my kitchen standing by my rotary wall phone getting ready to dial the number I knew by heart, I gave some consideration to just how I was going to approach Jimmy. I learned during my years of union negotiations that it always was best to review things in your mind first before you opened your mouth. And besides that, this call was not going to be an easy one. When he got out of jail on a presidential pardon by Nixon in 1971, and he began fighting to reclaim the presidency of the Teamsters, Jimmy became very hard to talk to. Sometimes you see that with guys when they first get out. Jimmy became reckless with his tongue, on the radio, in the papers, on television. Every time he opened his mouth, he said something about how he was going to expose the mob and get the mob out of the union. He even said he was going to keep the mob from using the pension fund. I can't imagine certain people liked hearing that their golden goose would be killed if he got back in. All this coming from Jimmy was hypocritical, to say the least, considering Jimmy was the one who brought the so-called mob into the union and the pension fund in the first place. Jimmy brought me into the union through Russell. With very good reason, I was concerned for my friend more than a little bit. I started getting concerned about 9 months before this telephone call that Russell was letting me make. Jimmy had flown out to Philly to be the featured speaker at Frank Sheeran Appreciation Night at the Latin Casino. There were 3,000 of my good friends and family, including the mayor, the district attorney, guys I fought in the war with, the singer Jerry Vale, and the gold digger dancers with legs that didn't quit, and certain other guests the FBI would call La Cosa Nostra. Jimmy presented me with a gold watch encircled with diamonds. Jimmy looked at the guests on the dais and said, "I never realized you were that strong." That was a special comment, because Jimmy Hoffa was one of the two greatest men I ever met. Before they brought the dinner of prime rib, and when we were getting our pictures taken, some little nobody that Jimmy was in jail with asked Jimmy for $10,000 for a business venture. Jimmy reached in his pocket and gave him $2,500. That was Jimmy. A soft touch. Naturally, Russell Buffalino was there. He was the other one of the two greatest men that I ever met. Jerry Vale sang Russ's favorite song, Spanish Eyes, for him. Russell was boss of the Buffalino family of upstate Pennsylvania and large parts in New York, New Jersey, and Florida. Being headquartered outside New York City, Russell wasn't in the inner circle of New York's five families, but all the families came to him for advice on everything. If there was any important matter that needed taken care of, they gave the job to Russell. He was respected throughout the country. When Albert Anastasia got shot in the barber's chair in New York, they made Russell the acting head of that family until they could straighten everything out. There's no way to get more respect than Russell got. He was very strong. The public never heard of him, but the families and the feds knew how strong he was. Russell presented me with a gold ring that he had made up special for just three people: himself, his underboss, and me. It had a big $3 gold piece on top surrounded by diamonds. Russ was big in the jewelry fencing and cat burglar world. He was a silent partner in a number of jewelry stores on Jewelers Row in New York City. The gold watch Jimmy gave me is still on my wrist, and the gold ring Russell gave me is still on my finger here at the assisted living home.